I'm Dale Thornburg, and this is a session on Are You as Christians Making the World Hotter? Are we changing the climate? I said you, not me, but yeah. Anyway. As a background, I teach forestry and environmental science at Humboldt State University in California. And I teach a class on this subject, a year-long class. I team teach it with two other instructors. So what I'm doing is trying to summarize a year's course in 55 minutes. But we do have textbooks, global warming, and how they affect forests. Because they're really affecting forests in California rapidly. So foresters are really quite concerned about it. Okay.
Aren't they affecting the forests all throughout the West with fires and so forth?
Well,
global warming?
Yeah. I mean, in California, we associate the fires with the warming and the change in climate. Now, I'm not sure if they do up here that much. But
Idaho was especially.
Yeah. But anyway, just a background now. Is the world getting hotter or warmer? That's the big question. Is it changing the climate? Now, just a background on the greenhouse effect. Now, in case people don't know how that works. We've got the sun and we're down here. Now, what's our atmosphere made of? Anybody know roughly?
Mainly
nitrogen. Yeah, it's mainly nitrogen. I think 78%.
What else?
Oxygen. That's 21. That leaves 1% left. And that 1% is the greenhouse gases, they call it. Water vapor, methane, carbon dioxide. No, the culprit you're talking about is carbon dioxide, CO2. That's usually only 0.04% of the atmosphere. So it's a pretty small amount of the atmosphere. Now, so the greenhouse effect is that the sun rays come down. Out here is the ozone. What does ozone do?
Filters.
Out ultraviolet light. So it filters some of these out. Most of the light, visible light, gets in, the earth heats up, then the long wave radiation goes out. And what happens to it? It's absorbed by the CO2, water vapor, methane. It's absorbed by these gases in the atmosphere, so it doesn't go out of the outer space. Now, what would happen if we had no atmosphere? What would the temperature of the earth be? What's the temperature of the moon? It's pretty cold. What's the temperature of Venus?
Very hot.
Venus has my figures here. 100 times the atmosphere that we have, but most of that's carbon dioxide. A surface temperature of 270 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, how do we know that? I don't know. Yeah, I think they got it down somewhat. Okay, now if you go into the past climate, if you can rely on a book like this, Earth History, a geological book, they talk about climate. Now the climate on the Earth has not been very stable. It's been widely changing a lot. So, if you believe in evolution or geological time scales, and look back at the history of the climate, that 3 billion years ago, the Earth's atmosphere had a 200 times the amount of CO2 we have now, and the Earth was very warm at that time. At least that's what they figure out. Now, as life started, single-cell organisms, plankton and stuff like that, started absorbing CO2, giving off oxygen. Now that gradually changed the atmosphere until, say, 100 million years ago, the Earth was still hot, but it was gradually cooling. That was the age of the dinosaurs at that time. Now, they figure about 2 million years ago, the Earth's climate stabilized, and we came to the CO2 level we have right now. And that's when we evolved at that time, humans, because we couldn't live in that hot, changing climate that we had in the past. And since then, since the last two million years, the climate's fluctuated a little bit, but not that much, maybe 5 degrees centigrade through the different ice ages. Now, I'm not sure if we know that positive, but anyway, we'll assume that the Earth's atmosphere has been fairly stable the last 2 million years.
Why did it stabilize?
Well, just a second, I'll say. Okay, now if you don't follow evolution, you believe in Earth was created by God. Same thing happened, okay? Now, they, or make the system work, you have to create a biological system, the Earth, that works, either evolved or was created to maintain a certain temperature. Now, like our bodies, we can maintain a certain temperature irregardless of the outside temperature, right? Our bodies keep it constant. We have a system that do that. Well, the Earth supposedly has a system that does that too. It was evolved or created. Now, I'm only going to take one part of this, and some scientists think this is the old-growth forest, that we call it. That about 2 million years ago, there evolved these old-growth forests. And I'll call them God's perfect CO2 temperature regulator. Either evolved or was created. It's been very stable. Now, how that works is, now this is a big misconception in the press, here on news, magazines, and so forth, how the system works. But it's being pretty well studied right now, especially in Washington, Oregon. Okay. We got this old growth forest of big trees, little trees, dead trees, logs. There's 1,600 different species of insects here, all kinds of fungi, microflora, lichen. And this is a very good, say, all these lichen insects absorb nutrients, nitrogen. So you have a really good cycle of nutrients in here. It's like a sponge that absorbs water. So it's a very efficient regulator. Now, that then absorbs CO2, and it gives off CO2. It absorbs it in the photosynthetic process, as long as it has light, water, and nutrients. It gives it off as it decays. Okay, now because it has a lot of nutrients, a lot of activity in here, if the CO2 goes up, it can absorb more. It'll absorb more. If the CO2 goes down, it'll absorb less. And so it's a very efficient system at doing that. Okay, now, that's what some scientists think. That this was either evolved or, if you want to, it was created. Okay. Now, what do we do with old growth forests? We cut them down. Right. So, about the time we humans got civilized, one third of the land surface was covered with old-growth forests, including tropical forests. All of Europe, Russia, India, China, North America were old-growth forests. Now, I spent some time in Spain with some foresters, and one forester there was telling me that. Say, 1,000 years ago in Spain, a monkey could go from Gibraltar to the Pyrenees without touching the ground. But with 700 years of warfare between two groups that believed in the same God, they killed all the forest, destroyed all the forest, then followed by 500 years of grazing sheep. Now most of Spain is shrubland. can't grow trees at all on because of their abuse of it. Greece at one time was all old growth. So the old growth forests in Europe were cut down a long time ago. And then when the white men came to the U.S., it was all forest, old growth forest, most of it, except the Great Plains and the desert. What did we do with it? We cut it down. Now, we totally destroyed the old growth forest of the east and south. We can't even reconstruct them because we lost most of these things that function. We lost the fungi, the insects that used to work in the system. They're gone forever. We can't restore them. We totally cut that down. Now, what do we do with this forest? Well, we're good scientists, we're good farmers, so we perk up this forest and we plant it with a young forest, a nice rose. The Europeans do this too, the Germans do it. And we're better than God at doing this. So, now that the Germans started this, say, 400 years ago, and their forests over there have decreased in growth by 2/3 over the last 300 years. They have 2/3 less growth in their forest. Their forests are dying now. Now, why has it happened? Because we got rid of all these things that function in here. Got rid of them. All we do is have dirt, sun, and a little bit of water. And the thing no longer can function that well. Because when the CO2 comes down, that increases. It can't increase growth because there's no nutrients down here. There's not enough water. So the growth slows down. It gets a little bit acid rain on it. It fouls it up completely. Acid rain won't really damage us too much because it's got a buffer system in it. All these things that function in here won't really do that. We do the same thing. We argue about, we got good scientific forestry in here. Now, if we take a forest like this and we cut it down, we plant little trees in it, 2-year-old trees, 8 feet apart. How long before that growth of this forest will be able to even come close to absorbing the CO2 that this does? Probably 100 years or more before this forest will grow enough, the trees are big enough, that they'll start to absorb high amounts of CO2. So if we cut this forest down, we can't replace it as a CO2 absorber for a long time. Because these trees are too small. They don't really function that well. Now, why do we cut down these forests? I noticed an editorial cartoon in the Seattle PI a couple weeks ago. I was out looking at your car. It says, sure, Paul Bunyan wouldn't have done this, but Paul Bunyan didn't have junk bonds to pay off. It shows a logger with a lawnmower mowing down the trees. This is in Seattle. Because he's got a pay off his jump bonds now. What did Paul Bunyan do? Who's heard of Paul Bunyan?
Pilgrim's Progress.
What did Paul Bunyan do?
Cut down trees.
With what?
An axe.
Okay, you cut down trees with an axe. This guy's got a lawnmower. Okay, now where did Paul Bunyan cut down his trees? Old growth forest. Right. Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Is there any old growth forest left in those three states?
Yes.
the same thing happened. They destroyed the ecosystem there, and a lot of that land is a lot less fertile now than it was before they cut it down. We cut it down for wealth, right? There's a lot of money there. I mean, right now, there's a lot of dollars right here. What's the price of a, what can you sell a Doug Fir for now? Probably $400 a thousand worth of feet. Probably in a big field like this is probably worth $4,000. And it's basically free if you cut it down. So there's a lot of wealth there now. Where do the junk bonds come from? What do you mean junk bonds?
Japan.
What?
Japan.
Well,
get.
There's an example of, say, two companies in California that, one of them in the Redwoods, that they, for 100 years, they come through and cut down a few trees every 30 years. Just cut down a few of them out here. When they do that, that doesn't destroy the system. It keeps it going, and there's still grow a new tree in here. So they selectively harvest it. Well, that company must have been in business for 100 years or so. They have a company town, stable employment, and continually cut this tree forest slowly. And they have stock out on the open market. What happens? Somebody comes along and there's a lot of dollars sitting here. And because their profits are low, their stocks are low value. So somebody bought up all the stock, they borrowed money through junk bonds, and now they have to clear cut the whole thing to pay off their junk bonds. Okay, so in 10 years it's all going to be gone. Well, one person's making billions or millions out of it. Now, I assume that happened around here in the Northwest. I'm not sure. I don't keep up with it around here. Anybody know about this?
Could be happening. I was assuming it was all the logs are shipping to Japan, but the motivation for that may be the same.
Right, yeah.
Here, most of the land, like Weyerhaeuser owns like 1.4 million acres, and they clear cut extensively, way beyond regrowth rates.
Right.
Northern owns like 700,000 acres, same policy, U.S. Forest Service, in some locations has the same policy, particularly like Gifford Pinchot National Forest. There's an individual forest is being managed.
Right, well now, say take our public lands, the U.S. Forest Service, and the BLM, well, we're using our tax dollars to pay people to cut down the trees and sell them to Japan. In Alaska we are.
Well, I thought that Japan wasn't supposed to buy any of our
From Alaska
forests.
They can. Not from here they can. From Washington, Oregon they can. Alaska they can.
But also by selling those logs off, they're keeping the prices high enough to where they can use the right. Forest stuff for domestic stuff, and then the Weyerhaeuser can ship logs off too.
Yeah, that's what Burlington Northern does. They sell all theirs to Japan and so forth. Now, I've heard that Burlington Northern says that, we got to cut our forests fast because if we don't, somebody will buy junk bonds and buy us out. And they'll make the profit. We want to make the profit, so we got to do it fast. So the problem here is there's too much wealth sitting there. Now, again, I mentioned this the other day about, why does our government take our public land and cut the trees at a faster rate than they grow? Why do they do that?
Because they can't see further than the next election to get back into power.
Right. See, there's politics. There's too much political payoff. There's too much money involved in this. I mean, there's really a lot of money. People are getting rich off this. Some people are getting amazingly rich off it. And so you put a few $100,000 in the Republican plate, and you get no restrictions on your cutting of it.
There's also an awful lot of jobs depending upon
Yeah, there's a lot of jobs, and the timber lobby, the loggers, is a pretty strong lobby in the state, in Oregon, in California, too.
You see, you get back to the problem, overall, the harvest rate is much higher and the reproduction rate. They get set in that mode, and they have all the system there to continue it. And rather than say, well, the sunset has occurred, you've overcut, you haven't remanaged, they say, no, we want to take the rest, because otherwise we don't have jobs. So it really is a big case of long-term history of mismanagement.
Right, okay, now, to go back to the global warming, now, we can't say this for sure, that this is the regulator of the CO2, but because that's pretty hard to scientifically prove that what I was talking about here is correct. But most of the scientists that work on this think that this is a CO2 regulator. Now, it's almost impossible to measure the CO2 uptake I'm talking about here. I went to the UW and got a PhD in the early 60s on the Weyerhaeuser Fellowship. And we went out to a forest and put towers up and tried to measure the CO2 absorption and given off of that. And what you're doing is you're measuring, you put a tower up here, you measure CO2 absorption, this little piece right here. You do this little piece over here and this little piece here. And you blow it up by a factor of a million. And your variability statistically goes to pieces, but on that. But anyway, most people that work with this, a lot of scientists feel that has been our temperature regulator over the past 2 billion years, allowing us to evolve the way we are now. Or God created the death. But we're eliminating that completely. Now, I talked about the other day that this is one of our noble lies, that we don't want to admit it. We blame it on the Brazilians. Now, the tropical forests don't work this well. The Brazilian forests don't work this well. You take the Brazilian forest, the trees are smaller. The soil is poor because it's too warm and the soil, the nutrients leach out of it too fast. The roots are shallower. The temperature are already higher. So in a tropical forest, the CO2 absorption and the outgrow is almost always the same. So it's not a regulator of CO2. If you increase the CO2, it absorbs it, also gives it off about the same amount. So it doesn't really change. Now, the factor they're concerned about is there's a lot of stored CO2 here in the biomass. If we cut it down and burn it, that all goes back in the atmosphere. That's what they're worried about. But we have a lot more here than they have down those forests, that their acreage is bigger because we've been cutting ours down for a long time. So that's one of these noble lies or misconceptions we have about these forests.
What about the Weyerhaeuser plan of growing trees that they can harvest in 30 years?
Well, it makes good toilet paper. And they can make money fast that way, but it's not a good regulator.
Doesn't help the atmosphere.
Yeah, doesn't really help it now, because they're not that efficient at being a regulator. Now, I mean, in theory, if we take this wood out, the stored CO2, and take it out and store it in a building like this, then there's stored CO2 all around us, a lot of it here. That helps the atmosphere. But if you cut trees down, you make pulp out of toilet paper, and you burn it, right away it just goes right back in the atmosphere on it. Now, that's why a slow selection system, you take this tree down, you make boards out of it, you make a house out of it, and stay that way for years and grow another tree. You're taking stored CO2 and you're storing it someplace, so it doesn't go back in the atmosphere. But if you burn it, then it goes back in the atmosphere right away. So there's kind of a balance between those two. Okay, now that's only one part of the global warming, that we've cut down the regulator. Now, up until about, they figure about 1860, that up until this time, The main increase in CO2 was due to we cut down these forests in Europe and Asia. After that time, it's mainly the fossil fuels and the CO2 emission, the coal and oil, after that time was more than cutting down the forest. So since 1860, the increase in CO2 has been due to fossil fuel burning. Now, so that's still increasing. Last year, 1988, we increased our fossil fuel burning by 3% increase over the previous year. We're still using more fossil fuel in the U.S. and the world. So the one thing we know about global warming is the CO2 is increasing. We don't know for sure whether that's going to cause the Earth to warm. We don't know that. That has to be theory or through models. Now, the last, essentially we've been recording temperatures in the world. The six warmest years we've been in the 1980s. 1988 was the warmest year on record in the world. 1987 was the second warmest. 1983 was the third. 1981 was the fourth. 1980 was the fifth. 1986 was the sixth warmest year on record. I'm not sure about this year here. It's probably going to be colder here. But the Earth is getting warmer. Now, what's the consequences of the Earth getting warmer? Or the CO2 going up? It's going to... They predict change of climate a lot. That we'll have different amounts of rain in certain areas. We'll have different storms. Storms will intensify. We'll have more forest fires. What, 2 years ago, the first time we ever had a forest fire in Borneo, which is the tropics, a wet climate, because of the climate changing, the climate shifting. El Nino is supposed to be caused by this changing climate. What's El Nino? The current along the coast, the warming of the earth. The salmon get fouled up. They can't find the right rivers to go back to in British Columbia because of the temperatures of the waters have changed. It fouls up the whole system. Supposedly, if the earth warms, the ocean will rise. The ice caps will melt. Now, if you want to read about this stuff, here's a good magazine, In Context. It's published in Bainbridge Island. It's up there. There's a whole issue on global climate change. Now, it's got all kinds of things in here about the scientific aspect. It's got about the noble lies. It's got about, it's all a communist plot. It's got all kinds of ideas about why the CO2 is increasing. It's a good article for an average person to read. I think it used to be up there. I'm not sure if it still is. Or you can still buy this in most magazine stores, at least in Seattle. But, okay. This past two summers, I've been doing research on mountain meadows. And one thing that I did in 1961 for my master's thesis, I monitored some meadows up in Image Lake and Canyon Creek Lake, and I got this data. I went back this past two summers and remeasured these plots. And what I found out was, which I didn't quite expect, this is all a statistical analysis. This hill up here. And I took these plots, say up this hill. I went back and remeasured about 30 years after I put them in. And now you take lupin plant, it's no longer occurring right here. It's disappeared. That was a dominant plant there 30 years ago. Now it's up here. And down here, some of the plants from lower elevation, some of the asters are up there, very common. They weren't there before. Now, the problem with this is lupin keeps moving up, gets up here, doesn't have any place to go. So that they figure that we'll lose a lot of species because of changing climates, getting a little bit warmer. Now, I can't perceive that it's warmer up there. It felt pretty cold to me. But that's one of their, things will change if the climate gets a little bit warmer, things like that.
What's the role of microorganisms in the ocean in regulating CO2?
Well, they absorb CO2 a lot, and I forget, they normally absorb up to about almost a third of what we put in the atmosphere. But they think that that's not happening as much as it used to, and they're not sure what's causing it.
I've heard the same thing. I've heard a third to two-thirds of the CO2 is in the algae associated with the oceans. What happens is it starts to warm, get more stratification. The issue is more stratification of the ocean. If you go to the Bahamas, it's pretty blue water, not reproductive, because you got about 70 feet of water there that's warm. There's cold water underneath. There's no mixing of nutrients, and so there's no biomass being created.
Right.
And so as the Earth warms, you're going to see though that striation or that isolation of nutrients move further and further north. The real rich climates for production fisheries are Alaska and the Arctic and Antarctic and the northwest coast and so forth, because of the lack of stratification, it's mixing up. So as the Earth warms, you're going to see less and less productivity in the ocean and less biomass production and less CO2
absorption. I got lots of scientific meetings. I went to one at UW a couple of years ago on the same thing. They had 2 days of talking about what's going on in the ocean with their productivity caused by the changing of the currents and the different stratification. And most of that stuff is over my head talking about fisheries. But anyway, that's some of the problems. Okay. So I would say that. Probably roughly, if I can read all this stuff, that 99% of the scientists believe that our Earth is going to warm. We're going to have real problems. Now, some of them are still critical about that. They think, well, it might cool. Some think, well, no, we're going to buffer the system and it won't really work. But there's a pretty general consensus that our Earth is going to get warmer. We're not in a cycle of warm and cold. We're going to get warmer because we're changing the atmosphere of the Earth. We're doing that. And we're destroying the buffer system. Okay. That's a future problem. It may not affect us now, but what do we do about it? We can don't believe what we read. Don't believe what I say. It's not true. I don't know what I'm talking about. We can let God take care of it. Say, his problem. He created it. Let him do it. Now, read Thomas Morton. He says, no way. We can't destroy what God created. That's a creation theory. We really got to be careful. If we destroy it, God's not going to fix it back up. That's Thomas Merton's theory. If you follow President Reagan's philosophy, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it with technology. If the CO2 builds up, we'll take it out some way. We'll build some big things to turn all into dry ice, which is CO2, right? We'll build big things and we'll take it out. We'll build a lot of mirrors and reflect some of the radiation back to the sun. We'll take care of this with technology. If you believe the Sierra Club, man, we better get going. We better stop driving our cars, insulate our houses, and so forth. So. Who do we believe? Okay. If I take, let me give some of this data on, I figured myself out, if I'm a good, not a good consumer, I belong to Sierra Club, I belong to the Natural Resource Defense Council, I belong to the Willing Society. I recycle, what else do I do? I don't think I'm a big consumer, but I figured out last year, and I was at Holden for 14 months, and I figured out how much CO2 I was responsible for for emitting into the atmosphere. And I was amazed. Like, say the CO2 emissions per person, like in the USA, right now it stands at 18.7 tons per person per year. The US, Russia, USMR is 13 tons. Most of Europe on the average is 7 tons. Take Brazil, the one we complain about is 0.4 per person. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with forests. This is just fossil fuels that we, CO2 fossil fuels. That's how it's calculated. It's not calculated if we burn forests and so forth. Now, the world average per person is about 3.5 tons. Now, they figure, calculate to stabilize the CO2, if we cut down all the old growth forests to stabilize the CO2, the average of this should be 2 tons per person per year. That's how much to stabilize. That's all we can put out. Now, the average, we do 18.7 tons. Now, if I go after what I did last year, my family of myself and wife and 2 kids, and we have 3 cars that are auto. We roughly drove the 3 of them 40,000 miles, which is above average. And that itself, green gas. Now we have Nissan's fairly efficient cars, but this still came to 16 tons of CO2 last year. I was in Holden this time. My kids weren't, but now I figured the house. Now I rented the house out, but I still say it. I was responsible for that. And we used about 12,000 kilowatt hours of electricity. Now where we live, that's produced by burning oil, not coal, but oil. And that's roughly equivalent to 12 tons of CO2 per year. Now, the big thing I did was fly around. I left home and hopped on an airplane. And my kids did too. I went to Europe once, my kids went to Europe once, and one kid went to Europe twice. So, in an airplane, I went to San Diego, I went to Denver, so forth, that we flew 90,000 miles on an airplane last year. Now, airplanes are very inefficient, as a means of travel. It's about half a pound of CO2 per mile per passenger in the plane. So, this roughly equates to 22.5 tons of CO2 by my flying, right? Well, if I wouldn't be in that seat, somebody else would be there anyway. So this is roughly 50 tons. Now they say, okay, I buy services, I buy goods, and so forth, also generates CO2. So usually you're supposed to double this in about 100. So divide by 4, that comes up, our family had 25 tons CO2 last year. I was holding and we're way above the USA average. They tell me I'm supposed to bring this down to 2 tons per year. Okay, now again, I go to church, I turn out my lights, I recycle, I buy my food in a co-op store, I come to Holden. I'm a good I'm a professional ecologist. How can I change my lifestyle? My house is made out of old growth bedwood. I burn a lot of wood because I like to burn a lot of wood in the fireplace. I have a single dwelling in California by herself. I got a lawnmower. I got three cars. I got a kid that lives in Germany. I got a kid that lives in San Diego. I got one in Montana. My parents live in Seattle, so I drive and fly like mad to visit people. That's our lifestyle. Now, I go on lots of business trips. I go to meetings to talk about the global warming. As soon as I leave here, I'm flying to Minneapolis to talk about global warming. Okay, now, how in California can we change our lifestyle? Can we do that?
Restrict driver's licenses.
Okay, do what?
Restrict driver's licenses.
No, that
tax the fuel heavily to discourage your use.
Okay, they're talking about that.
In Europe, they tax fuels. You look at the difference in spectrum, the difference in taxation on fuel.
Yeah, I mean, fuel is really taxed in Europe. I mean, it's the price of a gallon of gas over there is about $4 a gallon.
There's not much rapid transit in LA.
Not rapid transit, it's the wrong time.
And there are a lot of really wealthy people in California who
they would just pay. Yeah, I mean, I don't think, comment in California, if gasoline went up, it wouldn't bother me a bit. If it doubled, I still would cut my, because that's my lifestyle, is to drive. That's a California lifestyle.
But the long run, it would. In the short run, yeah, you can't adjust to it, but yeah. If you were paying $4 a gallon for gas, you wouldn't probably own three cars. You know, okay. You could begin to restrict it.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's.
I think economically you would only restrict it if you still had the same income. I think economically any taxation like that could possibly cause inflation. So if it caused inflation, then you would want a bigger salary. You would certainly widen the gap between the rich and the poor, but I would doubt very much if it would reduce the actual consumption. I go back to Paul Ehrlich's solution, and it's a reduction in population, and either you do that voluntarily, or you have plague and disease and what have you, and that nicely reduces the population.
That would
the ideal thing would be to reduce the population of the United States much, much more than you want to reduce the population in Brazil. Because they're okay, they're not consuming a lot. So a few good plagues and disease here would be the best thing.
Now, let's back up a little bit. Now, in Madagascar, they've cut down most of their old-growth tropical forest. Now, they're cut down for what reason? Not for wealth, like we do.
Farming.
For farming. The people are hungry. They need it to grow things. What do they cook their food with?
Open fire
with charcoal. They don't have electricity, gasoline, and oil. So they use those forests, they need them to live. But we're telling them, no, you can't do that, you're ruining the world. We cut ours down for pure wealth and greed. That's not very Christian.
Demonic.
This what?
Demonic.
So, and the lifestyle in Madagascar is not anywhere near ours. And we're going to tell those people down there now, wait a second, you're ruining the world. So stop cutting your forest so I can drive my car more. That's what we're doing, right? Now, last day.
I just want a more blatant example of that. When I was in Liberia, most of the jungle there has been cut down. A good portion of it is for slash burning to grow rice and that sort of thing. But an incredible percentage of the country that I saw had all been cut down and replanted in very nice, even rows with rubber trees so that Firestone could keep tires in your car. Yeah, literally.
Or coffee.
Well,
yeah, these are just rubber trees for miles and miles and miles all over the country.
No, last year, it was the hottest year on record. How did the people in Minnesota respond to that? Who's from Minnesota?
The air conditioners.
The air conditioners doubled in Minnesota last year. How do I know that? Because I read Utiny Magazine once in a while, which is something that was published in Minneapolis. Our response was, now when you buy an air conditioner, what do you do to the CO2 emissions? I mean, the public utility districts back there, whoever they are, they had to put in a permit for another power plant to burn coal because electric consumption went up in the summer because of more air conditioners. I recently tried to buy a car, another car, I'll make that three. And I couldn't find one in the lots without air conditioner. I don't, where I live, we don't need air conditioners because it's cold and foggy all the time. But we couldn't find one in the lots without air conditioner. And air conditioners in cars increase your fuel consumption. So, I mean, your point, will our government raise taxes on gasoline?
Quite difficult under Bush's promise of no more taxes.
Now, California might. I mean, they're talking about it. They have other problems besides CO2 emissions, and they keep talking about it. But Californians are down on raising taxes too.
The state of Washington's like raising its gas taxes 7, 9, 10 cents, but
now we can raise tax on cigarettes, right? Nobody's squawking. I mean, the taxes on cigarettes are how much percentage-wise? I mean, it's more than 50% tax combined federal and local cigarettes. Why can we do that? Smoking's bad for you. Same. Not everybody liquor. Smokes.
Yeah.
But can you do that with cars? No politician will do that right now. So, my conclusions, the topic is, as Christians, we are making the world hotter. I mean, we're 96% of the people in the U.S. are Christians. We're over-consuming. And we're not going to change our lifestyle. Now, go beyond cars. Now, I said in California, you know, I live in this four-bedroom house by itself. I got a lawnmower. And everybody down the street the same way. They all got lawnmowers. All got a lawn, all got a house. My house is insulated. I did that. It's not in a real cold climate. But our lifestyle, we live in these individual houses, which are very inefficient as far as power is concerned and heat. Will we ever get around to living in group-type housing? Sharing services, sharing equipment. Instead of everybody having one lawnmower, we share a lawnmower with 50 families. You get a lawnmower 1 hour a week to mow your little plot of lawn. I mean, that's not our lifestyle. Now, in Europe, they're starting to do that. In Denmark and Sweden, they're starting to have more of what you call these group housing. Again, I read that out of Unity magazine. There's a whole 4 or 5 articles on it. As a way of cutting down on our consumption, that we share more. We share more, rather than everybody buying something else, we share more. I can't see that happening in California. In California, they're still throwing up individual houses, big houses, by themselves. They're not efficient at all. I mean, there's no way. Is LA going to build rapid transit systems? What is Seattle? Anybody hear from Seattle?
Yeah.
What did Seattle do about a rapid transit system?
It's moving along. It's on the way to next year. Up a new tunnel under downtown Seattle.
Well, that's for buses, right?
But it has rails in it.
No, didn't they vote state. Down their rapid transit?
No, they voted for it. Against the advice of the councilman, the people voted for to begin the process of instituting a rail system by the end of the century or something like that.
Yeah, you're looking 21st century before you're going to find anything.
But at least they started. I mean, and even though there was it was recommended,
right,
that they vote against it.
Right, I was there for more or less.
The big thing they didn't do was not build rail over that new I-90 bridge.
Because Seattle is ideal for rapid transit. Is that It's an hourglass figure, but the rails come right to it. L.A., they're stymied about that because everybody lives all over the place. There's no central area. There's no central business area. There's no central industrial area. It's just it's a conglomeration, so they can't figure out where to start on it.
The other thing that happened in Seattle was the city of Seattle just passed internally a cap on downtown growth.
Did they?
And so in that sense, they didn't spread it out again.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are the same people that say yes to rent transit also are saying no to a big downtown. And you've got to concentrate the people if you're going to have the right. Rapid transit work well. So there's been that whole movement seems to be counter movement. So.
See, the scientists argue that, we've got to do this rapidly. If we take 25, 50 years to do it, it's going to be too late. That the we have too many bad consequences, and if all these changes that they predict will happen, we'll have real chaos in our society because we can't handle that much chaos. And so we have to do it pretty fast, and we're not doing it in the United States at all. To get down to 2 tons of CO2 emitted per person per year is almost an impossibility. Now, what's China going to do?
Cutting their population down.
China's cutting their population down, and it's working. But they want to increase their material consumption and their production. They want to come up to our standards. What kind of fuel, what kind of energy are they using?
Fossil
coal. The most inefficient of fuel that we have. So, all these countries want to come up to our standard or close to it. And they have to do that by getting more energy. So we're not going to tell China, no, wait a second, you slow down. Don't develop your industry using coal.
The thing is, that's the one fossil fuel that really remains in abundance.
Right. It's a lot of it, yeah. We have a lot of the state of Washington we don't
use. Tremendous quantities in this country and China. Russia?
I mean, can we, the other day we talked about toxic chemicals and pollutants, stuff like that. In theory, we can clean those up, but again, we clean up CO2. We can't. We can't clean out CO2 when you burn coal. That's the main byproduct that comes off of it. That's what gives you the heat. You can't take that out.
The problem isn't just finding cleaner sources of energy. You pointed out on the board that Europe produces less CO2 per capita than USSR, but there's a lot more nuclear power, I believe, per capita in Europe.
Yeah, France has a lot more nuclear power than Germany does.
I was going to bring up the question of nuclear power, too. Why doesn't the United States recognize the fact that nuclear power is the answer?
Well, we're too scared of the nuclear waste problem.
I don't think it's the only answer.
Yeah.
Pardon?
It's a partial.
Partial answer. Now, if we can develop, what is it, new fusion, which
cold
fusion. Cold fusion. There's possibility of developing other energy sources that are not harmful. Maybe technology can solve it, but that's a gamble.
I'm just dying of curiosity. I've been here since the 4th of June, and I haven't a clue what happened about those guys in Salt Lake City with the fusion.
I haven't been doing that. I've been up in the mountains. Anybody want to comment about that?
Is it just fizzled
up?
Yeah.
Fizzled up. I read a couple articles where they finally let some people in the lab, and it sounded like the people they let in were highly skeptical that they'd done the experiment well. But I never heard any definite conclusions. But then I've been here.
I don't think that they have a final word on it.
No.
That was kind of a Rube Goldberg
setup. And some people have not been able to duplicate it at all, and others partially. Mm-hmm. So they aren't certain. Yeah.
Well, when I was at Los Alamos about 15 years ago, they were working on fusion experiments there. So they talked then as though it was a possibility right into the future.
Well,
Speaking of Los Alamos, in your last comment, just having come from New Mexico, we're going through a battle now. I mean, it's been going on since we arrived in New Mexico 9 years ago, and it's still going on, that they created a place to get rid of the nuclear waste down in Carlsbad. Now they can't develop any way of getting the stuff there. So we can have a very viable nuclear industry unless we know how to get rid of the waste.
Well, that's true in Hanford too, but I guess they can, well, of course, in the beginning they didn't know that it was toxic waste. So they did have lots of piles right on top of the ground, I guess, that they have to remove.
Yeah. Now, see, that, again, that's a possibility, but see, scientists figure, well, by the time we put that in effect and go through it, it's too late.
Yes. Well, there they have a mountain that they have rails running into that they dispose of the waste.
Yeah, I know. They're working on that, but there's still problems with it.
Don't you think that the basic question is, what will it take to convince the majority of Americans that they need, that we have a serious problem here, and there's going to be a change in lifestyle that will be necessary? Because Americans by nature are so individual,
right,
and so consuming, that I think about what I'm saying, getting down to two, and I think it could happen, but I think there's going to be a lot of convincing that will be needed.
Well, I think something has to happen, drastically has to happen, before it'll to both of people will change.
Once again, Paul Ehrlich, in his latest book, would say that it has to be an event,
to
convince us in the way we think. It has to be an event.
But it's more than that. It's not only do the majority of people have to say that, the politicians have to be convinced.
Yeah.
It's like a two-step process. And just like, you can take an analogy with the handgun thing. I mean, if you were to go poll the American public, handguns really have no place in our society. Except for maybe a policeman or people really in sporting events. But yet, so many people believe that. Yet the politicians are so bombarded by the handgun lobby that there's no way ever to deal with that issue effectively.
Except when there's an event.
The event
is when somebody goes into a schoolyard and shoots up a whole lot of kids.
So, but they can even shoot the President of the United States with a handgun, and they still don't do anything. So, and I think you got a little bit of that issue here too, because there's so many interests invested in where we are today.
See, I look at the problem with if you have, it has to be an event that really affects things economically, not just like a handgun.
Like the drought last year.
Like a drought. I mean, it has to be a major thing, and then the problem is whether we'll accept the truth, whether we'll form another noble lie and say, this is the cause of it. I mean, societies don't respond to events too well. I mean, I'll say go back to, say, Germany in the Depression. They're a Christian nation. What happened to them when they got economic trouble? They blamed the Jews and killed them all. They're the cause of our problems.
Yeah.
I mean, people believe that. And I wouldn't put that past us, that in our society, we'll get a leader that says, that's the cause right there. Chinese are the cause. The black people are the cause. It's those people in the tropics. They're the cause of our problems, not us. I mean, I don't put us beyond that.
Well, I think that the whole economy will collapse, and lots of people will be out of work, out of money. They'll just simply have to.
Well, just as well, all this toilet paper is going to be around.
When it hits the fan.
Well, I think time's up, so anyway, the thing that really bothers me is why we ruin God's perfect machine, why we cut it down, why we don't realize why we have to use things that were created, why we have to destroy it. That's what bothers me. So, thanks for coming.